Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you all today. So today we're talking about breaking old habits, specifically breaking the habit of being yourself. You get that? That's a great phrase. Chew on that for a second. Breaking the habit of being yourself. Why do we keep doing the same things that we don't like, that bother us, but we do them over and over and over again? Bad relationships, bosses that don't treat us well, self-sabotage, weight gain. Why do we do that? Why don't we break those habits? They're ultimately the habits of being ourselves, right? So today we're going to learn about how the brain really works, how the brain evolves and learns new skills so that we can break these old patterns and habits. This isn't necessarily through talking at the brain and positive thinking our way through this. This is how the brain physically works, the neurons in the brain and how they connect and disconnect. Joining me is neuroscientist and also an expert in brain function and brain chemistry. And he's also one of the scientists from the film What the Bleep Do We Know, Dr. Joe Dispenza. Hi, Dr. Joe. How are you?
Very good. Happy to be with you.
You too. We had a fabulous time. Joe was on my Gaiam show in Colorado, and that was one of the most watched shows on the network so far.
Wow, that's good news.
Yes, it's so because the pictures that you did were so good. I mean, the video and the slides and all the animation that you added in there to drive the point home of what you're talking about, the visuals were excellent, really excellent for me.
Oh, good.
You know what I did? I took the videos, and you can look this up if you're listening on GaiamTV.com or Joe, is it on one of your websites somewhere?
Yeah, it's on my website. Some of the clips of the neurons connecting is certainly on there, yeah.
On what's the website name?
www.drjoedispenza.com.
Okay, Dispenza with a Z. Mm-hmm. So I showed these videos of moving neurons and how they connect, and we're going to be talking about this today. And I showed it to my 9-year-old before she and her friend took a science test, and they had to memorize like 24, subjects or words from the periodic table and of elements. And she did great on that test because I showed her how the neurons connect in the brain. So I just wanted to tell you, I took it home and I applied it right away. So let's tell everyone else what we're talking about here. What exactly does it mean when we have a habit that we can't break? What does that mean?
Well, let's start with what that means, the neurons connecting, and then we'll jump into a habit.
How's okay,
that?
Great.
So the neurons that we showed in the television show, the Gaiam television, really learning is making synaptic connections. And what people don't understand is that every time you learn something new, you actually make a biological and neurological change in your brain by forging a new synaptic connection. That's what learning is. Learning is stitching a new connection in the intricate folds of your gray matter. Remembering is maintaining and sustaining those connections. So children tend to wrap their mind around this very uniquely because the moment they see a picture of a neuron connecting and they can associate that with learning, there have been tests that have shown that children will do better on tests when they get a short course in neuroscience because they can understand what they're doing when they're learning and why. And the intention behind the learning then drives the behavior with meaning. And when we put meaning behind anything, we're more prone to get results or value out of it.
Mm. And visuals, I mean, you hit it from every level, the visual and it's kinesthetic and auditory. You really see how all of these things work and how the brain literally can create a habit or a pattern.
Sure.
And to do this on radio is Well, mostly go to Dr. Joe Dispenza's website, which is drjoedispenza.com, to see the visuals. But basically, there's two cells that are in a this is a petri dish, or it's no, it's a.
It's on a slide.
Slide. Okay, great. And you can see the. It looks like a string that connects between the two neurons, and it forms a bridge. It fills a gap there, and that is actually its cells connecting in order to form a memory. Can you explain a little bit in more detail?
Sure. So if you picture a neuron, and it looks like a leafless oak tree in winter. Mm. Now, instead of it being stiff and rigid like an oak tree, picture it like cooked spaghetti. And as the spaghetti is cooking and boiling, the ends of the leafless oak tree are changing and morphing moment to moment. And everybody thinks that the brain is hardwired. In other words, it's a fixed set of circuits that define who we are. But the brain is completely malleable and changeable, and it's because it's pretty much the consistency of a soft-boiled egg. Now, 78% water, and these nerve cells sitting in there, and these nerves have the tendency to want to connect and disconnect, or connect and reconnect, or establish connections or communities of neurons that reflect a thought, an idea, a concept, a memory, a behavior, a skill, and action. And so it begs the question then, if we're not learning anything new, or if we're not doing anything differently, then pretty much the brain stays status quo. Now, your personality creates your personal reality.
Okay.
And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. Now, by the time we're 35 years old, according to the psychological model, the psychology says that our personality is a finite set of habits and behaviors, emotional reactions, beliefs, and perceptions that run like an automatic program. What that really means is that by the time we're 35 years old, we keep thinking the same thoughts, performing the same actions and habits, living by the same emotions, and secretly expecting our reality to change.
Mm-hmm.
So to change, then, is to begin to make the brain work in new and different ways. And if we keep firing and wiring the same circuits and the same sequences, the same patterns and the same combinations, that finite signature of firing in the brain is called an identity or a personality. It's thinking in the box. So the one ingredient that allows us to begin to shake things up and make the brain work in new and different ways, and by the way, whenever you make the brain work differently, you're changing your mind, because mind is the brain in action. And if you can remind yourself of who you want to be or what you want to experience,
mm-hmm.
then the brain literally changes to reflect that new state of mind.
Hmm. So it changes in physically. It changes physically, and it also changes your, and that, again, it's called neurophysiology, right? Neurophysiological.
Neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity. Thank you. It changes that response. So then when we get stuck into a bad pattern or a bad habit, it literally is stuck in the brain, right? Not permanently, but that's what it looks like, is it looks like this little stuck
sure.
pattern, right?
Now, instead of those neurons jumping and connecting with different ones and becoming social and interacting with everybody, the neuron is fixed in a very finite pattern with a very specific community of connections that aren't changing, because the person is living the reality from the same level of mind. And by observing their life from the same level of mind as the quantum observer, they keep everything the same in their life. So
is that what
nerve cells that fire together wire together,
mm-hmm.
then the same thoughts produce the same choices. The same choices create the same behaviors and actions. The same behaviors and actions create the same experiences, and the same experiences create the same emotions. And the person stays status quo, and nothing can change in their life.
So that's what anxiety looks like in the brain. That's what addiction looks like in the brain. That's what pleasure-seeking addiction looks like. All those types of things look like in the brain, because the brain literally wants it, right?
Well, yeah, but we can use the same model for someone who's an expert golfer. They've developed a certain level of mind, or an expert cook, or an expert ballet dancer, or a great parent, that they've learned new information. They've wired that information in their brain. They've then made different choices than their typical predictable choices. Those new choices elicited new behaviors, and the moment they got their body involved in doing something, they're going to have a new experience, and the new experience is going to create a new emotion. And if they've done that enough times, they've created a great habit that's connected to a different state of being. By the same means, you can have anxiety and you can obsess about some worst-case scenario and think about the worst thing that could happen and produce the same chemistry in the brain and the body as if the event was happening.
Wow.
And you begin to wire the brain neurologically, and you begin to emotionally condition the body to move into a new state or into a state of being. And if you keep doing that enough times, the redundancy of that cycle begins to teach the body to learn anxiety better than the conscious mind. And once the body knows better than the mind, that's called a habit. A habit is when the body is the mind. Now, 95% of who we are, by the time we're 35 years old, is a set of memorized behaviors that really run like automatic programs. So people then try to change by using 5% of their conscious mind. They try to think positively, but really they're feeling negatively, or they try to be, you know, calm, but their body's been conditioned like an animal or a horse trained to live in fear. So the change then has to bring the body into the mechanism.
It has to work hand in hand, as far as I've noticed, that the motivation and the positive tools that you learn help when you've got the brain into the positive pattern. That's the part where it helps for me. But just getting from the negative stuck place into a totally changed state just using words, it's temporarily effective for me. But I've noticed that if I go into the brain and actually change the patterns, then that is more lasting. So how do you do that? How do you change the stuck pattern of, say, anxiety to a pattern of happiness in the brain?
Sure. Well, we have this amazing frontal lobe. It's 40% of our entire brain.
Wow.
The frontal lobe is the crowning achievement of the human being. It's what separates us from all other species. And because we have such a large forebrain, that part of the brain does a few really amazing things. It's the seat of our conscience. And when you begin to pay attention to how you're thinking, as you begin to notice how you're acting, and you become aware of how you're feeling, because we can observe who we're being, it means now that we're no longer the program, but we're the consciousness observing the program. Now, that faculty in neuroscience is called metacognition. It means then we have the ability to begin to objectify our subjective self. So if you're looking at the program, it means you're no longer the program. And by that very mechanism, the first process of change is to become conscious of those unconscious states of mind and body. In other words, you just like if you were learning a new skill and you saw a videotape of yourself dancing the salsa, or you saw a videotape of yourself giving a lecture or hitting a golf ball or hitting a tennis ball, the moment you see yourself, you would be able to self-correct better once you're able to observe who you're being. Now, the frontal lobe is pretty much that faculty. So the process of change first requires unlearning and then relearning. It requires breaking the habit of the old self and then reinventing a new self. It requires pruning synaptic connections and sprouting new connections. It really means losing your mind and creating a new one, to unmemorize an emotion and then recondition the body to a new mind and to a new emotion. So a person who's living in a state of anxiety may want to say to themselves, okay, I've knocked my brain and body out of balance by firing and wiring the same circuits, hardwiring my brain into the habit of thinking about something terrible always going to happen and being prepared for it, so much so that my body begins to emotionally and physiologically respond as if it's in that scenario, even though it's not, but my body believes it is because it doesn't know the difference between the actual experience in reality and the emotion that I fabricate by thought alone. Let me see now. How am I going to find balance? Okay, well, let's get down to what do I look like when I'm anxious? How do I think? What are the thoughts that I think? How do I act? Let me look at and observe how I behave, and let me look at other emotions that come from that emotion, and let me become conscious of those unconscious thoughts, those unconscious habits, and those unconscious emotional reactions. And the moment you begin to look at them, nerve cells that no longer fire together, no longer wire together, you literally begin to biologically break apart or prune away the old circuits that are connected to the old self. Now, this is
just with awareness?
This is awareness, and this is how change has to happen, because you have to, first of all, bring those states of mind and body into your awareness so that in your waking day, that thought would never slip by your awareness unnoticed. You would never go unconscious with that habit again. You would never live by that emotion that made you feel less than who you really are. And as you begin to become conscious of it, you have more conscious control over it. Now, once you begin to understand that, then you have to ask yourself, how would a great person live? Or who am I when I'm at my desk? Or who in history do I admire? And as you begin to think about a new way of being, contemplate, speculate possibilities, open up, you're beginning to make the brain work differently. And when you do that, you're making your brain work in new sequences and patterns and combinations, and you're firing and wiring the circuits in your brain that will literally become the neurological hardware of your new destiny. In other words, you're installing the circuits so you can use a new circuit, a set of circuits that reflect a new level of mind. Now, we got to go one step further.
Okay.
It's not enough to just have it be an intellectual process. The privilege of being a human being is that we can make thought more real than anything else. And when we do that, if the thought in our mind literally becomes the experience, the end product of every experience is called a feeling or an emotion. Now, the body begins to respond. The body, as the unconscious mind, believes it's physically changing or it's experiencing that state. And as soon as the body begins to feel like it, when mind and body are working together, our thoughts and feelings are aligned, you're reconditioning the body to a new mind, and you are literally moving into a state of being. Now, if you can remind yourself every day on who you want to be, that new state of being becomes a new personality, and that new personality biologically, neurologically, chemically, genetically begins to change, and now you have a new personal reality.
Now, do you teach these concepts in businesses and in consulting? Because I know that you, of course, you have a chiropractic practice, which is more than, I mean, it's phenomenal and amazing. But you also coach people as a consultant, don't you, in business?
We have a program where we work in corporate arenas to teach the biological model of change. Change is the big buzzword.
Amazing.
Getting people to break certain habits and begin to unmemorize certain emotions and shorten the refractory period of their emotional reactions.
So
and make employees more joyful, more healthy, more productive, more aware. And our program focuses not so much on doing something differently, because every program talks about doing different things.
Right.
We're talking about being differently, moving into a state of being. And so we have 16 trainers right now that pretty much are training companies around the globe, and the model seems to be pretty
That's
accepted.
Really, a really great idea, because it's great to have an outside company come in and do it as well, if any business owners are listening to this, because sometimes you don't have all of these tools and techniques that that Dr. Joe Dispenza has and that he's been teaching for years and years, and it's so scientifically proven and validated, and the visual images really back it up. That's a really amazing way to change a belief system in a company, of course, to a positive, more productive one. So now we've learned here that thoughts become things, that they actually physically are things. So if you just, as a negative pattern would be created, you can just as easily create a positive pattern or a pattern of happiness or the desired pattern, I should say, whatever the desired state is, by repetition, right? If you do the positive act repetitively, then it changes and breaks the old pattern and creates a new one. Did I say that correctly?
Sure. There's actually four very specific ingredients that grows brain circuitry.
Oh, great.
First thing is learning.
Mm-hmm.
Learning is number one. Because when you add a new stitch to the three-dimensional tapestry of your gray matter, that becomes the raw materials to make your brain work in new ways. And if you learn new things, you begin to think about them and review them and contemplate them and analyze them, you're shaking things up a little bit.
So give me an example of that. Give me an example of that. What would it be to learn a new pattern?
Okay, so think about the movie What the Bleep, right? We did that movie with the intention of showing people that there's an alternate way that you can look at reality. And mm-hmm. people had to go see it a few times to wrap their mind around it, but it caused them to begin to think differently. They began to speculate, oh, my gosh, this is who I am. This is the way reality is. I always knew this. And so with a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of information, they began to perceive their reality differently because they began to organize new circuits, and the brain can only perceive equal to how it's wired. So they began to learn the knowledge and began to cultivate a new level of mind. And once you learn information, the next step is to get instruction.
Okay.
You got to get the body involved. You got to begin to demonstrate everything you learn intellectually, because when you demonstrate everything you learn intellectually, you're going to have a new experience. A new experience enriches the circuits that you learned intellectually and then chemically instructs or teaches the body to understand what the mind is intellectually understood. So knowledge is for the mind and experience is for the body. And
okay.
When you demonstrate it, you reinforce the circuits and you begin to signal emotionally new genes and new ways, and you begin to embody knowledge. Then the third ingredient is you have to pay attention. You have to pay attention to what you're doing. You have to be aware. You have to be conscious. Because if you're not paying attention, those circuits will not stick. The last ingredient is repetition. You got to do it over and over again while you're paying attention, while you're getting the instruction, and while you're aware and learning. And when you put those together, you will develop new networks in your brain, new neural networks that reflect a whole new level of mind.
And that's how you create and you grow new, of course, new memories or new habits, basically, in the body. All right, so let's talk about what stress can do. So say, for example, you create a new habit or new pattern, a new way of eating. Let's take diet for example, and you know that you have exactly what you should eat and what desired weight you want to get to, and you want to set some new patterns. And you've set these patterns, and then you have a birthday, and all limits are off, and you start eating like heavy fattening foods again. Does that break the pattern permanently? Does it re-adhere to the old pattern in the brain? How does that work?
Well, there's two ways to look at this. I always say, I don't care that you fell off the wagon or you lost your intention. All I care about is how soon you're going to get back on. So some people, they lose their purpose, or they fall short of their vision, and then they feel so guilty, and they feel so bad, and they feel so unworthy that the unworthiness and the guilt becomes the addiction that begins to undermine what they're really setting out to do. It's not the fact that they broke from their intention. It's the fact that they're going to stay in a state of guilt and unworthiness or resignation. Now, that's the old self coming back. So it's really simple. The person who goes, okay, I fell from grace today. You know what? What I'm going to do tomorrow is I'm going to work out another extra 10 minutes. I'll burn it off. I don't care. I'm just going to catch up, and I'm going to be responsible for who I am. And there's no emotion that goes along with it. There's no state of addiction emotionally that begins to cause a person to fall to a lower denominator and then feel all those feelings and live by that particular state. They've actually shortened their emotional reaction. They've overcome it. And now they're back to their intention again, and that's that type of self-correction, that type of self-discipline, is what creates greatness, because that's our ability to jump back on the horse, our ability to move back into that state, is all that matters. That's what we love about ourselves.
Okay.
When we don't do it, it's what we don't love about ourselves.
Right. Okay. So then so that's great. So you don't have to completely beat yourself up and stay off the bus. You could get back on.
Exactly.
So that's good. All right.
So now let's take it to the part number two now.
Okay.
Now, the question is, what emotion were you trading to feel to, let me say it another way. What emotion are you trying to make go away by overeating, by not getting up and exercising? What is the emotion that is causing you to return back to the old self? Because once you look at the cause of that, in other words, people overeat or they break from what they typically know is better for them because there's some emotion that keeps them from being that. And when you look at that emotion and you say, okay, I felt that emotion, and then I started thinking this way, and those thoughts created certain choices that elicited certain behaviors, and I went back to experiencing myself the same way. Ah, the next time I feel that feeling, I'm going to be aware that that's the exact place where I make the turn. And you begin to address that emotion, and you begin to make those changes.
Okay.
Now, if you overcome the emotion, then, well, there's no reason to fall off the wagon.
Hmm. So that's how you get into, that's exactly how you get into the entire rewiring. And this is the step-by-step tools. We're talking about step-by-step tools on rewiring your thinking. And my guest is Dr. Joe Dispenza. Now, when I'd spoken to you before, you talked about this concept of the three brains. And we saw this in a photo, and this is exactly how this works. But there's three different types of, I mean, there's one brain, but three different types of brains within that. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, we have three brains in one, and they have their own anatomy, their own physiology, their own sense of time and space, and their own independent functions. Now, the first brain is called the neocortex. The neocortex is the seat of your conscious awareness. That's that walnut that has all those folds and valleys that sit on the outside. It's divided in half. And that's what plugs us into reality. It's the seat of our conscious awareness. And as I said, when you learn something new, that's where you make the new stitch in the thinking brain. So you read the book on how to build a doghouse, how to drive a car, how to hit a golf ball, how to cook Mandarin cuisine, how to be more of a loving parent, how to forgive, how to make money or become wealthy. And all of that information is philosophy. It's theory. It's intellectual data. And the neocortex stores philosophy. Now, the next question is, once you've fired and wired all those circuits to create all of that information neurologically in your brain, what are you going to do with it now? Can you apply it? Can you personalize it? Can you demonstrate it? Can you modify your behavior in some way? Can you change your actions to match your intentions? And if you do it properly, you should create a new experience. And the new experience then activates a second brain called the limbic brain or the emotional brain, the chemical brain. The moment you have a new experience, everything you're seeing and smelling and tasting and feeling and hearing, all of your five senses are picking up all this data from the external environment, and it's rushing back to your thinking brain, and it's causing jungles of neurons to organize themselves into patterns. The moment those neurons string into place, those neurons are being reinforcing your intellectual thought of what you learned. It signals that limbic brain and chemical brain, and you begin to send a chemical to your body. And now you're beginning to embody knowledge. Now you're teaching your body emotionally or chemically to understand what your mind has intellectually understood. Now the body is beginning to get a new signal, and new genes are signaling in new ways, and you are literally rewriting the genetic program in that moment. But it's not enough to do it once. You got to be able to repeat it over and over again. You got to be able to do it at will and replicate it so many times that you neurochemically condition your body to memorize wealth or health or compassion or a loving parent as well as your conscious mind. And now when your body and your mind are working together, you're in a state of being. Or we could say you activate that third brain called the cerebellum. It's now become subconscious. It's innate in you. It's who you are. You don't have to think about it. As a matter of fact, you know how to do it, but you don't know how you know how. It's because you are it. And when you're in this state now, we could say that you've memorized an internal order that no person, no thing, no experience can move you from it. And when we do this properly, then now we are in a new state of being.
So if what if we don't know the messages that are coming to us? So like subliminal programming or, you know, does that still affect us in the same – can we still – change them in the same way? Do you know what I'm saying?
Let's say this. When you are processing information, you process it from different levels of consciousness in your brain. If you are living from a state of victimization in your life, everything is somebody else's fault or everything's happening to you and you have no control over it, you are certainly more programmable than a person who's living from another state of mind, from a quantum level of mind that says I create my destiny and that my thoughts are more profoundly powerful than anything in my external environment. That's a different consciousness. So it's kind of the law that, you know, people say, well, you know, a witch doctor or a voodoo person cast a spell on me. Well, only if you're open to that, you know, because there has to be some type of acceptance or agreement to it.
So
as we move into different levels of consciousness, I think we're less prone to those conditions.
So a listener was asking if the subliminal messages from media can affect us and if we can actually change those. I think she was asking from that perspective.
Well, let's see. There's two ways to respond to it, but let me say this. The media has a great way of enrolling those emotions of stress and emotions of survival to cause people to begin to look for probably the worst-case scenarios and begin to feel disempowered and see the world as a harmful place and that nothing great is happening, to keep us on a certain level suppressed. So if your emotions are being manipulated through the television, then more than likely something outside of you is causing you to think and feel, then I'm certainly clear that your brain in that state where you're in a state of trance is more programmable than if you have a certain level of awareness and discernment and you're seeing it for what it really is. Well, you see it from a different level of mind. Personally, I don't spend a lot of time watching television.
Yeah, just because you don't really need that, actually. Well, all right, so what we're talking about here is the fact that change is actually possible, and these are all the different ways that we're talking about how change is possible. We have callers giving us a call here, and if you have a question for Dr. Joe Dispenza, give us a call. 818-985-5735 is the number to call if you have a question for Dr. Joe Dispenza. The visuals you can find on his website are absolutely phenomenal. These are cutting-edge slides. You can go to drjoedispenza.com. Explain what these slides are specifically. So I highly recommend people checking this out because it absolutely impacts the way that you learn. The brain learns and absorbs new material, and you get to see how habits are formed and broken. It's really fascinating.
Mm. Well, again, it's just when people understand what they're doing and why, I think they're more prone to understand how.
Yes, absolutely. Why people do the things they do. That has been my number one question. Why do I do the things I do? That's motivated me since I was 12 years old. And I picked up my first book called Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain, and I'll never forget that. That was my first book. And that's because I was so curious about why do I do the things I do? Why do other people do the things they do? And I'm still asking that question, Dr. Joe.
Well, keep asking that question because it's the only inquiry that gives you answers, right?
That's
ask
true.
A question, you don't know.
Right. That means I stopped being curious, and that's never possible. All right. So as the callers are coming in, I just want to I talk a little bit about this movie that I saw that you were in, which was really good, The People versus the State of Illusion. Really great movie by Austin Vickers. And it's a story that, could happen to anybody. It looked like it was a true story, but it probably was for somebody. But about a guy who was, had a glass of wine, then he went to go see his daughter, his 9-year-old daughter, in a play, and driving home, accidentally hit a woman and killed her, and she was a mother of two, and he wound up in jail. Now, his daughter went into foster care, into the system, because he was a single dad, and he was all she had, and vice versa. I mean, they had a great relationship, and of course, when he went into prison, didn't hear from her, and so forth. And it started, this emotionally gripping story gets you into the movie that's all about the brain, and Dr. Joe Dispenza's in this movie intercut with around behaviors that this particular person gets to, this destitute situation of not being able to talk to his daughter, and his life's destroyed, and how he turns it around in prison. And around the brain, it was really a gripping movie. And and above, What the Bleep Do We Know and all of the, other amazing things that you've done with the Immortal Brain and all of your great material, that was it was very well done. I really liked that, and I'm glad that you were part of that movie.
Well, how sweet. I think the feedback that Austin has been getting from that movie has been very, very positive. And the message is really simple, that we're all in prison. And we're in prison because of our habits of thinking and habits of feeling. And breaking out of the prison means that you really have to lay down a lot of the old and step into the new. And you can't go to a new future holding on to anything of the past, that you literally have to leave that behind.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, so I want to go to some of the callers. They have some great questions coming in. Again, the phone number again is 818-985-5735. And I want to go to, here we go, if I can, hang on 1 second. There we go. Mickey, do you have a question or comment for Dr. Joe Dispenza?
I do. This is a brilliant show today. I listen quite often.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I might have called about this before. A little over 2 years ago, I lost my boyfriend of 27 years.
Wow.
He passed on. Mm-hmm. And I have been trying to maintain my life without him. So I sabotage my time and energy and prioritize other things besides my art, instead of my art, and I'm an artist.
So your question is, how do you get back to the art?
Yes.
Good question about how to change that habit.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, there's natural stages that we go through with loss that involves grieving. And there's chemistry that goes along with it. But, you know, every time we lose something or every time we experience trauma or loss or crisis or disease or diagnosis, it's usually a wake-up call for us to begin to become somebody else. And unfortunately, we usually wait for something like that before we really give ourselves permission to change. Anytime we are confronted with something like this, and loss is not the easiest thing to overcome, you have to integrate new knowledge, Vicki. I mean, the question is, if your boyfriend, if you could understand that he actually loved you, and if he could say something to you, he would probably say something like, look, you know, eternity is a big place, and yeah, I'm always with you, but you got to get on with your life, honey, and you got a lot of things still to do, and you're stuck. And those emotions are keeping you locked into very specific states. So I always ask myself the same question. What piece of knowledge that's abstract, that's conceptual, that's bigger than me, that I want to believe in, that I want to try out to see if it can take me from point A to point B? And if it is that you believe that eternity exists and there's life beyond this place and consciousness never dies, and if you were in his position and you left and he was still here, you would kick him in the butt and say, hey, get off your resting state here and start creating. And when you start creating, I'll send you a sign to let you know that I'm with you.
Wow.
You got to get up and you got to do something.
Wow. I heard you laugh. For a second there, I did. That is a great way. Thank you so much for your phone call. That's an amazing way to reframe death, Dr. Joe. That was a beautiful, I followed you right along with that. That was beautifully, beautifully said. Thank you for that.
And on the flip side, you know, ask them to come and visit you. I've had people in my life that I loved very much that passed this plane, and I said, you have to come and visit me, and I want it to be real, and I want it to be as real as this. And when I had that experience, I knew that they were always with me and that this idea that reality is so linear is such a lie. We are multidimensional beings living multidimensional lives, and we just got to be open to that.
Oh, that is a great thing to say, especially coming from you as a scientist, to say that. And it's so true. I mean, there's evidence out there all in our world, at least, that we see from Raymond Moody and Dr. Larry Dossey. And, I mean, there's so much information out there that's about the nonlinear quantum realities, the parallel universes we live in. Yes, there is. It's a block time, they call it. It's the beginning, the middle, the end, constantly circling. Great questions coming in from the listeners. Okay, Daisy from Los Angeles, you have a question for Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Hi, unfortunately, I've only caught half the show, but it sounds so interesting, and I'm struggling right now. I'm on my 10th year of trying to change as far as my anger issues I've had, and I've tried books and self-help books. I've tried, even a therapist has told me that at 37, I cannot change my ways. I can somehow suppress them a little bit, but, I mean, and I'm desperate now. I have a 10-year-old daughter that's been affected by my behavior, my anger problems, and now I have a baby, and it's like I feel hopeless, especially a therapist telling me that there's no way I'm going to change.
Well, she should listen to this show.
Listen, let's do a test to see if you're addicted to anger. Okay. If I said to you while you were in a tirade there, carrying on and running those hormones of stress that are knocking your brain and that body out of balance, if I said to you, "Hey, I know you're angry, but what I want you to do is stop," I'm certain that if I said that to you, you would probably tell me off at least four different ways. Now, isn't an addiction something you can't stop? So try on the idea that the strong chemicals that are created from your angry state is just an emotional state that gives the brain and body a rush or a high. And you subconsciously or unconsciously are addicted to the problems and the conditions in your life to reaffirm your addiction to remember who you think you are as a somebody. But that anger is not who you really are. That's just a state emotionally where the body has become the mind, and you empower it because those chemicals only last 90 seconds to 2 minutes when they run through your body. And if you keep them going longer than that, then you're faking it, that you are reinforcing those emotions so that you can get or control or have an outcome in your life, and yet the anger doesn't work. So a couple of suggestions. My new book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, is that I promise you, you will be given the tools to how to make those measurable changes. That's number one. Number two, you sit down with yourself and realize that those emotions are pushing the genetic buttons that are going to begin to create disease. And you don't need to do that in the long term because no organism in nature is designed for long-term stress. So you have to ask yourself the question, but living by this emotional state, is this loving to me? And if the answer is no, then you begin to shorten your emotional reactions. I don't care if you get angry. Everybody gets angry. It's how long you get angry, because if you keep it going for weeks or from the moment you react, for moments to hours to days to weeks to months to years, it goes from a mood to a temperament and ultimately to a personality trait. So your daughter has mirror neurons, and what she's doing is she's imitating your behavior. Mirror neurons say this: I'm going to pay attention to more of what my mother does than what she says. So if you want to be on the fast track to enlightenment, to be the greatest parent and greatest ideal, then you start demonstrating empowerment. You start demonstrating calm. You start making the choices because you're responsible of not only for yourself, for the people around you. And if it means you have to go to bed after they fall asleep and sit down and write down the thoughts that make you angry and decide that they're just circuits that you fired and wired in your brain that you can change, because every time you stop them, you biologically prune them away. And when you understand that if you're not going to run those chemicals to condition your body is going to be like an addict for a period of time. You're going to feel uncomfortable and uncertain, and you're willing to ride it out. On the other side of that anger is true self-love. And when you reach that point where you're falling in love with yourself again, then no person, no thing, no experience can move you from it.
Does that make sense to you? I mean, do you have some tools there, Daisy, on what you can do instead of being...
It makes so much sense. Mm. And the thing is, I do let it ride for a long time. I mean, you mentioned 90 seconds. It seems like I will go on and on. And it's something so silly like, you know, not doing your homework, and I'm yelling and verbally abusing, and it's just, it goes on and on. It's like, I can't seem to just, like, stop it. Like, I'm overdoing it, and it's the next day, and it's still in my head. I'm still thinking about it, and I'm still angry. It's so silly.
I mean, that really made a lot of sense, that you are responsible for every second after that. So you can make the change after those 90 seconds of those chemicals running through your body, which you could step away and walk away and say, Mommy needs a break for. You can go into a room, shut the door, and let those 90 seconds ride itself out and make a conscious decision and say, all right, Dr. Joe says, I am responsible for every moment after this. And make a choice and walk back out of that bathroom with the choice. And you also need some tools for changing, though. Here you need different ways of looking at approaching the homework, rewarding behavior. You need some go-to tools for things like that. I know of an amazing parent coach who I used at the beginning of, and you know what, baby, we're also all products of our conditioning as well. You learn this from somewhere. There's something else that's healed in you that's still reacting to the anger. Let's figure it out. Let's figure it out. So there's, this is great information also from Dr. Joe. There's a parent coach that I know who's amazing. His name is Bill Sterley, S-T-I-E-R-L-E. You can look him up on my website, theawareshow.com. Just look up parent coach. And he is helps you so much with your needs that are unresolved, and that will then affect the way that you parent. And I hear you, and I know how it feels to be pushed as a parent, and I know as a working parent where I get stressed and make 9,000 decisions a day, and I come home, and the last person I'm going to take it out on is my daughter. So I have to consciously make that it's work, honey.
Yeah.
I hear you. I hear you. But what Dr. Joe's saying is that there's also no excuses for this, and that you are responsible for your
every 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great awareness. Thank you.
Thank you so much, you guys. Dr. Joe, I'm on my way to go get the book.
Good luck.
Good job. All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
All right. Bye. I want to stay on the phone with you forever. This is awesome. Can we go to another caller? Are you good with that?
Sure. I'm happy to do another.
Great. Thanks. Renee from Montebello. Do you have a question for Dr. Joe Dispenza?
Hi. Yes. Thanks for taking my call. At the moment, I am working. And I like my job, and I'm really grateful that I have a job with the whole economy. But I'm going back to school to kind of put myself towards the job that I love. So how do I stay optimistic with going with school, my job, and just the economy and struggling to make ends meet? How does one stay optimistic?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of that question.
How does one stay optimistic with her job?
Well,
she's not happy with the job.
You and I, honey, have been hypnotized and conditioned into believing that we need a reason for joy, that we need a reason for optimism, we need a reason to give thanks. That's the old model of reality. That's Newtonian physics of cause and effect, something outside of us changing something inside of us. There's only one way you can be challenged to know how great you are. When you look in the mirror, you see your face, that reflection tells you who you are. How does the ego know who it is? We need a reflection, and reflection is our life. And so everybody has to be challenged to forge something greater out of them. And when we can cultivate gratitude for no reason at all, when we can cultivate a level of mind and body of joy or love independent of anything outside of us, and we can wake up in the morning and ask ourselves, okay, this one day is my lifetime, and I'm going to evolve my actions and my choices to be greater than I was yesterday. And if it means adversity, bring it on, because I want to know what I'm made of, and I want to know what's on the other side of this. And so when we begin to wake up in the morning and say, okay, instead of me getting up and doing the same things and going to the same places and seeing the same people that push the same emotional buttons and going and memorizing all these things that I do so well, let me, before I get out of bed, decide who I want to be today. And I'm not going to get out of this bed until I am this person. And you sit up and you say, how would greatness be today? How would it think? How would greatness love today? What is the new state of being I want to move into, and how can I change my life and others' lives? And when your body begins to emotionally respond and you get up from that new state of being, if you could maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day, you better get ready, because something unusual is going to happen in your life. And when the feedback comes in your environment and it reflects something back to you that's equal to that level of mind you've created with, you'll pay attention to what you did and you'll do it again. So, you know, great opportunity for you, because you are going to school, you do have a job, the economy is crazy, but if you are able to overcome this, and you have the job, the new job, and you're educated, and you overcame these conditions, you're going to love yourself so much for saying, I did it, and I did it without too much support, and I just totally respect myself and others who can do the same, and I'll be the living example for others to do the same.
Wow. Did you get all that, Renee? Yes.
Oh, my God, I'm, like, tearing up. Thank you.
Aw, that made sense to you, and it rang true for you. What was the biggest part you got out of that, Renee?
When he said, you know, just in the morning getting up and seeing how I can change myself and others today, I think that really struck a chord with me.
I love it.
I deal with families, and that's just...
Oh, bless you.
That's it.
Yeah, it takes a very special person to do that. You are one of those angels. I want you to know that, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate your call. I wanted her to repeat that so that she really got that she really got that learning, and she seems like she really did. That's so great. You get to affect people's lives all the time. I wanted to ask you if you could tell, we have just about 3 minutes left. You told me a story, and I want you to tell us again about your daughter and the plant, because it really made a big difference for me. And I got to interview Larry Dossey after I interviewed you, so we're going to go home and do this plant study here. But tell me how your daughter, who's lucky enough to be your daughter, got the opportunity to kind of experience what it means to think differently.
Well, you know, everybody asks what they can do for their kids to help them embrace these ideas. And, you know, these little plant experiments that I did with my daughter, we actually do in some of our workshops, and without a doubt that if you take three specific planters and put a seed in each one of those, we put corn seeds in each one of those, and if you're feeling a negative emotion, or if you're feeling anger or frustration or judgment or whatever it is, fear, and you decide to take all of that energy and put it into that seed and channel it from you into that seed, and then the next seed, you give it as much love and nurturing and caring and hopefulness for a new life and a great life, and the third seed you pay very little attention to. I did this with my children when they were very young. It was really amazing because every day they would come home and they would look at the seeds. And lo and behold, the anger seed or the negative emotion seed grew very stunted. It only grew only a few inches compared to the seed that was growing in the state of love. It was maybe three or four times the size, and the control was somewhere in between. But my daughter came home one day, and she was really thinking about it. And I always believe with children, if you give them the facts, they'll interpret the laws. And she was having some type of scramble with her brother, and she just stopped for a moment, and I watched her, and she paused, and she said, "No, I'm not going to feel that way. That wouldn't be loving to me." And she understood in that moment that in any other state would not help her to grow and flourish. She understood it. And to this day, when she makes decisions based on that thought. Is this loving to me? So we've done those experiments with the groups of hundreds of people, and we have seen the seeds that got the hate actually decay. They got maggots and never grew compared to the seeds of love. So we know that it's an absolute quantum truth.
Wow. That is such a great experiment. It's a great way to wrap up the show as well. Dr. Joe Dispenza has a book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. It's his newest book. And it's, again, you can find any information at drjoedispenza.com. And you can see the slides of what I was talking about earlier. And are you going to be in the Los Angeles area soon, or is there anything else coming up for you here in L.A.?
Gosh, I'm sorry, Lisa. I don't even know.
That's okay. No,
I'm in Phoenix now.
You're very, very busy. But you know what? You're so good at what you do. Everywhere you go, I watched you for a whole day. I got to spend with you in Colorado, and just to see who you're being was magnificent. And again, it's one of the most popular shows on that Gaiam TV network. So great, great information. Thank you so much for being on my radio show.
Oh, I think you're amazing and wonderful.
Oh, my gosh. Coming from you, that's a huge, huge gift. Thank you. And take care, and then hopefully I'll cross your path again, okay?
Okay, let's make it happen.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Joe.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Dr. Joe Dispenza. And again, the book is called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Thank you so much. I've always loved information that empowers people. That's the whole goal here, is to bring these inspiring messages from people, to communicate them to you, to inspire your positive growth and change. That's the whole tagline that was downloaded to me from a dream on one wonderful night, and that's where the Aware Show was born. So that the message I got was communicating messages that inspire positive growth and change. By the way, if you're interested in hearing the 2,500 plus interviews that I've done over the past decade, go to the Aware Show website, and we have a community page on there where all 2,500 interviews exist and more. 2,500, and we're adding new interviews every single week. The website is theawareshow.com, and literally thousands of masters. I've been mentored by thousands of masters, and it's on there. We have multiple interviews with Dr. Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and Dr. Daniel Amen. As you all know, I'm a big fan of the brain sciences and bringing the information we talk about in terms of personal development to a practical level and how it works in the mind and the brain. Dr. Bruce Lipton, again, a cellular biologist, talking about the cellular biology of positive thought. Greg Braden brings that consciousness aspect to us via conversations about geology and history. And Chris Howard, we talk about wealth consciousness and wealth secrets. There's medical breakthroughs that we talk about with David Wolfe and Aunt Louise Gittleman. And we even speak with the angels, with Doreen Virtue, who has probably one of the biggest followings I've ever seen. She's incredibly popular because she talks so practically about angelic and psychic realms. It makes it feel like it's just right here next to you. And I think one of the reasons she's so popular is because it makes sense to so many people. So for a leap of faith to enter into that realm, or even if you're well studied in the consciousness arena and you've been in this movement for a long time, it's a way to introduce yourself to something deeper. So if you're just getting started and you're saying, what are those weird people talking about? Or if you are deep into your studies in consciousness, this website will give you on demand every aspect and perspective that you are looking for in terms of an interview. So I invite you to go there to theawareshow.com. And remember, theawareshow.com. So come meet your mentors. They're waiting there to teach you. And go to theawareshow.com. Thank you so much for listening. It's because of you that all of these shows have existed. So thank you so much for being a part of it. And until next time, I invite you to stay aware.